All right, so let's get to the main event. Anyway, good buddy of mine. I've watched him grow in this program. I'm really proud of you, man. I'm glad you're able to make it out tonight and share your experience, strength, and hope. Let's welcome to the podium Jesse A. from Orchid, huh?
All right. Jesse, I'm an alcoholic. Yay! What's up, guys? This is pretty chill. Cool. Thanks for asking me to speak. It's always a humbling thing to be asked that. Reason I say that is it's incredible to be in this position today. Mm-hmm. It truly is incredible for someone like me to be in this position, able to share the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, the first time I think I related and I actually connected with AA was a speaker meeting in Marin County up north. I'll never forget it because I went to a ton of meetings before that. I went to a ton of meetings, and it was a huge stag meeting. Just a bunch of dudes and like a bunch of old timers. I didn't know what old timers were at the time. I was like, a bunch of old people, and then this younger guy gets up there with a tie. And I was like, that's kind of funny. Why is he wearing a tie? Like, you know, like he takes this thing really seriously. You know, that's what was going on in my head. And he gets up there and he's super fired up. And he's just, I think he had like 2 years or something. And he shares, and I'm like, and he's telling my story. And I'm like, oh my God, like, I'm like that guy. And I was like, if he's sober, I could do that. Like, whatever this is, and at the time, I couldn't stay sober. I just couldn't. I was trying to do all the stuff. Kept trying, but the half measures availed me nothing. And I see this guy. Man, it's the first time I think I had hope, right? So to be in this position, that's why I'm saying that. It's just such a big deal to me. I get to do this. This is so cool. Danielle, welcome. Super happy you're here. Chris. That was cool. That was really cool. Yeah, he talked about being in detox, and that was my a commitment that I had that I wasn't ready for. I just got 30 days, and it's just funny. Someone goes, it was Jessica goes, we need someone to run the panels, and I got to meet Chris, and I got to meet some guys, but I remember Chris. The reason why he stands out so much to me is because he was there for so long, first off. Second, Chris has more time than me, right? Chris has more time than me. So that's a good message. It's like... He stayed sober. I didn't. So even with my commitment, you know what I mean? I just wasn't ready for this. And I kept doing my thing, kept going back out. And then I remember coming to a meeting about 2 years later. And he had like, you know, like a year and some change. And he sounded pretty good. And I was like, whoa, trip out. You know, this was like, I got to see AA and the effect it has when you actually do it. And I've always admired you, man. I admire you. I do. My sobriety date is, speaking of my sobriety date, 10/15/2016. I got 4 years and some change. My sponsor is Bob F. Lives down in Oceanside now. He was here for a while. He has 30 years sobriety. He's finally an old timer. Right? He always talks about that. right? You know Bob. Funny story about Bob. I said I would tell one funny story about him, but if you ever get to talk to Bob, he's really, this is funny. My sponsor makes fun of himself. And that's a big thing for me. It's amazing to be 30 years sober, right? Wow, that's crazy. But he's kind of bummed out about that. Because he got sober in 1990, and he always wanted to say, like, the guys that had time were, like, in the 80s. So it's, like, 89. I got sober in 88, 87. Victor's laughing. And Bob goes 1990. and that's a struggle for him. It's funny. It's funny because we all just got our stuff, man. And he's such a, you know, I love my sponsor. I've had a few sponsors, Kevin being one of them. Him being here is a big deal for me, because I respect you, man. I love you, and I wouldn't be here without you. There's no doubt about that. So I have a home group too. It's important. It's my Thursday night men's stag, 6:30 at the Orchard Presbyterian Church. It's a fun group, but a serious group at the same time, if that makes sense. Crosstalk is encouraged there, so it can be a shit show sometimes. But we make fun of each other, which is important. I mean, Bob Darrell talks about this. He talked about this at his convention, and he's heard the saying, "We'll love on you until you can love yourself." He likes to say, "We'll laugh at you until you can laugh at yourself." And that's so true, because I took myself so damn serious when I was new that nothing was funny. Because it wasn't funny what I was going through, and it's not funny being me. And I just didn't laugh at that. And I've learned to laugh at myself today. I don't take myself so seriously anymore. That's such a relief. God, that's such a relief. That I have friends in my recovery who we laugh at each other, we call each other out. I have really good friends in recovery. So I want to say this is that another big part of our group is that we really don't forget the tradition five right here. We don't forget our primary purpose at that meeting. When there's a new guy, you're going to get swarmed. You're going to get a lot of phone numbers. And not only that, more importantly, you're going to get called. And you're going to get text messages. And you're getting invited to meetings. And you're probably going to get rides to meetings if you ask for it. That's the group that I'm a part of. And I love that. You'll probably get voluntold if you're new. You'll get voluntold to do things. And it'll probably come from Lee Carroll first. That was my first commitment at an AA meeting, was because Lee C said, "Yeah, you're the coffee guy." It's like, oh, what does that mean? What, I gotta do something? And I made coffee for a bunch of grumpy old men, and they're very serious about having their coffee on time. Daniel has a coffee commitment right now, right? Yeah. Yeah. You ever been late on making the coffee? No, yeah. I have. Yeah, it sucked. Yeah, man, I have a home group too that I've heard this, you know, choose a home group you're comfortable with. Well, that didn't work for me. I have a home group that makes me feel uncomfortable when I'm not doing the work. Because I feel like you're talking at me when I'm not doing the work and you're talking about the work. It feels uncomfortable, you know? And we talk about the solution. We're a very solution-based group. So if you're not working the steps, you don't have a sponsor, it's going to sound foreign. And you're probably not going to feel part of. And that's a big deal for me. Because I always used to be a guy who just wanted to not do the work. And it's why I couldn't stay sober. And so the reason I have that as my home group is because Cody, it's because of Kevin, guys like that. I remember telling Cody, Cody was my first sponsor I ever had. Actually second, but I said to him, I was like, yeah, he's all, yeah, this is your home group because this is my home group, you know? And I was like, oh man, like there's other meetings I'm more comfortable at, you know? He's like, I don't care. You know, that's not what it's about, man. And just like, he's a cool dude. I love him. He's still sober. You know, so I hear the message at that group, and it's an intimidating group. We speak from the podium, and we have a 3-minute timer. I love structure. it's just the AA I was brought into. I guess just start talking about my story, huh? Okay. So first things first, I just want to say for anyone new that I'm going to talk about my story, but the real thing is about my story is it's not that interesting. What's really important about my story is that I was dying at one point, and I was suffering from something that I didn't think I was going to get out of. It was a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And through the 12 steps and through my higher power, through these rooms, I'm sober today and I've recovered. That's a fact. So if you hear anything else, hear that, please. So I had an upbringing kind of like Chris. I had good parents. I think I had a good upbringing. It wasn't nothing crazy. I've heard stories that are way crazier than mine. You know, it's pretty vanilla. The thing was that I guess I should focus on that socializing was really tough for me during my childhood and I just never felt a part of, and that was a very common thing for me. My parents did the best they could with the tools they had. I learned that through the steps, because my perception of them wasn't that when I came in. I thought my dad was a mean man. I used to tell people that, you know. I used to be like, he used to beat the crap out of me, you know, and stuff like that. But it's like, yeah, but he was a really good man, you know. And so, you know, and I was bullied. That's a big part of my childhood that stands out. I didn't know what to do about it. And I didn't fight back, which always pissed me off growing up. It made me hate myself, so that's a theme for me, is that I hated myself because I thought I was just a big wimp. And because, you know, when older kids like punch you, like oh, you know, my dad would just be like, just punch him back, like attack him. I'm like, dude, I'm like a little kid, man, I'm scared. That was it though. I got my ass kicked off, and it just seemed like there was a big target on my back. You know, I just felt like that. I don't know why. I just was like, why are you picking on me, man? It just felt like that. Like, why are you doing this? And I think I was just a gentle kid. And I got my ass kicked a lot, and then I became very angry. And I had this thing where I started having this inner world, and I think this is where you start getting into the alcoholism. Because it really doesn't have to do about drinking. I mean, I'm going to talk about drinking, but you're right. There's something really weird about me, you know, and it's a very deep thing, and it started early as I can remember. I just felt very different and not a part of. Didn't know how to connect with people. Didn't know how to be a part of, so I would do things like I'd get bullied and I'd lock myself in my room for like after dinner until nighttime. And like wake up and like start my day. So I started like secluding myself early on, you know. And then when I got to junior high, I wanted to be tough because I never wanted to be hurt again, you know. So I shaved my head, and I listened to bought the 50 Cent album when it came out, Get Rich or Die Trying. You know what I mean? You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. And I got tough, you know, and I got tough, and I created an identity that was like, you're not going to mess with me, you know. And so then I started getting in fights, you know, to prove that I was tough, you know. And it was all facade, it was so fake, you know. It was so funny that I'd act all tough and act all like I'm with the gangster kids, but then I walk, when everyone walks home and stuff, I go to like to the nice house, you know, like with my parents, and like my parents are good. I'm like, hey, how's it going? Like, yeah, everyone's good. You know, and like a lot of my friends were like going home to like some like messed up stuff, and I knew that, you know. And so I was just trying. I just didn't want to get hurt again, so I wanted to be tough. And junior high is a good point to focus on, because that's when I started drinking. I had my first drink. Probably a little bit before that, but it did something for me. And you hear this in meetings, but it did something for me that shoot, I don't think it did for other people because it was such a big deal for me. I can't explain it other than I felt like for the first time in my life up to that point, I was like, oh, I don't have to be Jesse. Like, I can be kind of like more than that, you know? I can be kind of outrageous. I can be violent, you know? I can say what I want to say. I can be confident. And I remember the first time I drank, I drank to black out. I blacked out. I don't remember what happened after a certain point. My cousin said he found me in the garage, you know, and so I never drank normal. And every chance I got, I wanted to get drunk. And it was never about, like, you know, I never had a normal relationship with alcohol. My relationship with alcohol has always been kind of messed up. And I'll never forget that I used to still, at that point in junior high, before any social event, before any dance or anything I was going to go to, even to go to a friend's house, and there was going to be other friends there, I would take liquor out of my parents' liquor cabinet. And it was a nice cabinet in the bottom. I would pull out, and there was a bunch of bottles, you know. And so it was cool as I'd take them, and I'd like mix and match, and I just would like fill up a water bottle like this, just like this, and then I would just pound it. And I would just go to the bathroom, and I would just pound it, and then show up to wherever I was showing up. I had a nice little, I was just kind of drunk. And I did that so often that I actually, I finally, oh yeah, and I would fill up water to the levels would come up. You know what I'm talking about? You put the water in, and the whole level comes up so it doesn't look that bad. I did this so often that eventually it was just water in the bottles. So I'm not kidding. Like, I just like got to a point where I was like, oh, this doesn't taste like liquor anymore, but I'll just keep doing it. That's how desperate I was. I just had to have that solution. It was a solution for me. I was like, I hate being me. I hate that shit. I really hate being me, so I'm going to drink. And my parents one time had a get-together, had a party, and my dad did those like events for his people at work. And they came over one time, and they're they start hanging out. I remember my dad comes into my room, and he's just like, "Hey, there's no liquor in those cabinets." He's pissed, you know. "You're drinking all the liquor in our cabinets." And I'm like, "What's wrong with you?" And being already good at lying, I was just like, "Dad, I didn't want to tell you this, but my friends who've been coming over, they've been drinking the liquor. It's just like, we've been doing it together. It's my friends mostly, though." So those friends who I had were not allowed to come over anymore. So it's funny. And they're like, "Why can't we come over to your house anymore?" I was like, "I don't know, dude." I threw them under the bus. So I got in trouble quite a bit for my drinking. It started happening. I drank at school when I could. I drank at parties. It became very prominent in my life that I wanted to just get hammered as much as I could. Drugs are a part of my story. The big book talks about high sedatives, you know, high-powered sedatives that push Bill over the top. So, you know, that's what happened to me. I don't think I'd be here at a young age without drugs. So thank you. Yeah. Thank you, drugs. So I started mixing my drinking and using, and it became pretty bad pretty fast. You know how that goes, you know? I surrounded myself with a small group of friends who did what I did. And so we were those dudes, you know? We were the guys who had the stuff. We were the guys who were going to show up and be drunk. If you just knew we were bad news. You didn't want us to be at places because we just were stupid. We were so stupid. Like, we had guys that started fights, you know, and it just was, and we drive drunk, you know, we'd get hammered, and then we get in our cars, and then we drive out to Sisquoc because of that long road, and we just like go 100, 120, you know, like really stupid stuff out there all the time. My buddy totaled two of his Mustangs. So we just were living like that, you know. And I got my first DUI right after my senior year of high school. Yeah, there you go. There you go. Me too, huh? And I got my second DUI, I think it was 2 years after that. So so I was 20. So I got my second DUI. And my second DUI was pretty, this is where it gets kind of, a little bit scary. It's like, it's always scary you're driving drunk, but I drove drunk out to Guad for no reason. Like, I got hammered at Elmer's and hammered at, I was going back and forth between Elmer's and what was the bar, the Irish bar called before? It was
Rooney's.
Yeah. So I go to
Rooney's. Oh,
yeah. I go to Rooney's and have Irish car bombs, and then we were all hanging out. And it was a Tuesday night. It wasn't even crazy, but so it was Tuesday night. And I drive out to Guadalupe for some reason. I don't remember doing this. And I get all the way to Guadalupe. Like, I'm like, you can see the city, and you're coming as a straightaway. And I drive, I don't know how fast I was going, but I go off the road into a ditch and total my car. And it and everything it's smashed except the cart, the driver's seat. It's smashed. And the only thing I had was second degree burns up my right arm. And I think I had a bloody nose because of the airbag. So it's just like, boom, the airbag is what burns you, because you fall asleep like this after you get in a car accident. There's acid that comes out of those airbags. I didn't know that. So the funny part was about this story is I'm blacked out. I don't remember all of this. I would come to in a drunk tank, right? You know that. And I read, this is so funny. Now it's funny. It wasn't funny then, but I get my, they let you read the police report, because you get a copy. And so I'm like, what happened? So I'm whatever. And they said suspect was walked up to our car, telling us that he found a car that was that crashed. So subject didn't have a shirt on. And was bleeding all over his face. He was trying to help us find the guy who he thought was running off. They were like, that's so funny. And so, so 2 DUIs, and I can't keep a job, I keep getting fired, or I keep walking out as soon as I get mad. I always want to, I'm super sensitive, so I just fight anyone who calls me out on anything. I can't handle authority, can't handle a boss writing me up, all that crap. Just really dysfunctional at this point. So I start doing other things. I won't get into it, but I got really skinny. Got really skinny. Yeah. And I got introduced to AA through having my 2 DUIs. So I had to go to all AA meetings. And I'm in my AA meetings. I want to kind of illustrate this because it's interesting. But I was seeing, I was really skinny, and I was seeing shadow people, so I just was really off, And my pupils are huge, because they keep fluctuating between being normal and huge, and I'm like an alien. Like, I just don't really, I'm tripping out, and I think I'm dying, and every time that I black out now, I'm like, there's suicide attempts happening. So that's starting to get more and more scary, I'll never forget one time I woke up in my garage, and my dad, who out of the blue comes to visit me at my apartment at 2 a.m. because he just thinks something's wrong. Wow. Crazy. And he comes in and he wakes me up, and I drink a bottle of Johnny Walker, and I was just in there and I wanted to die. So I had my windows down and I fell asleep like that, And he saved me. He's like, what the hell's wrong with you? It's like, I don't know. There's other scary stories I won't go into. I just want to illustrate that it got really dark. And I thought that I was going to die soon, and I really didn't have much to live for. It was kind of like I didn't build any good relationships. My I had girlfriends all the time that I cheated on, and I just was nothing. There's nothing really good going on in my life. So I just was like, and I can't stop doing this crazy thing, every time I got drunk, something bad would happen. It was like Russian roulette. And I'll say it like that is a better example. It was like in the beginning, alcohol was really working, You know, it was like good time, good time, good time, good time, bad time, bang, right? Then it was like good time, bad time, good time, good time, bad time, right? Then it was like good time, bad time, good time, bad time. Every time, sorry. Then it was like bad, 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 good. Oh, dude, yeah, it's still good. It's still good, right? Like we can still do this. And it was bad, 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 bad. And you're always searching to have that one more experience where you're like, still, it's still good. Look at it. This tonight was dope, you know? And you're trying to hang on to it, you know? And the big book talks about that, the oasis, you know? And when Bill thought Ebbie Thatcher was talking to him, he's like, oh, this is going to be another good time. You know, I was like, oh, Ebbie's sober. That sucks. I so relate to that when Bill's like bummed out that Ebbie Thatcher's he's sober. And he's like, oh, okay. But I started trying to work Alcoholics Anonymous. I actually started, I was like I said, I was scared. You know, and then it started being like, yeah, I'm pretty scared that I'm going to die and that my family's going to find me. And it's going to really suck. And I wasn't ready to die. I just kept doing that when I was drunk, you know. And so I was going to meetings and I couldn't get this. So it was really tough for me. I mean, I remember being in meetings for a few years and just, it was a blur. Like it just, I just don't even remember what was being said in those meetings. You know, it just was coming one ear out the other. And I got serious for the first time when I went to San Francisco. I moved there because I was like, I got to get away from my hometown. I thought that geographic would be the solution. I'm going to go away, move away, and I'm going to try to do the deal over here. I picked up a sponsor who was serious about this, and he had a little more time. He was like a year sober at the time. His name was Nyan. He's a really cool dude, kind of a hipster, and he was very serious about the big book and doing the deal, and he was a great example of Alcoholics Anonymous. He was really about service. He was about the steps. He was about the traditions, and he rarely shared in meetings unless it related to something in the big book. And I love that. I was like, I just thought that was so cool. I was like, oh, like, I was like, I don't even know what's going on here. And this guy like knows what's in the big book or what's in this thing. And by the way, this is the same big book I picked up at my first meeting where I picked Nyan up to be my sponsor. He said, someone introduced me to him. And I said, he goes, oh, would you work with me or do whatever? And I didn't know what to do. And he's like, you have a big book? And I'm like, no, I don't. I was like, and he's all, you have any money? I was like, no, I don't have any money. He's like, go ask that guy for a big book. And I walk up to the guy and he's all, yeah, just tell him you don't have money. And so I told the guy who was the literature guy, well, that guy says you're going to give me a big book for free. He was like, I didn't say it right, you know? And the guy was like, what? He's all, yeah, I'm trying to work the steps of the sponsor. And he's all, just take the book, man. And this is it, you know? I'm laughing because I wonder if he knew that, like, that little shithead that was like, are you going to give me a free big book? You know? Was, like, actually going to do this, you know? It's so cool, you know? Like, who would have thought? And I got to work in steps and half-assed my steps and half-assed everything my sponsor asked me to do. I wasn't ready, and I think this is really important for anyone who sponsors people and they're young in recovery, because I'm still young in my recovery, but I get pissed off sometimes when guys don't get it. I used to get really pissed off. I used to be like, I'm telling you the solution. It's here. We're going through it. What it was, and I trip out because I look back at what Nyan did for me, and I was a frustrating sponsee. I mean, I really was a frustrating sponsee. I had a bunch of ideas. I always had a counter argument. I really did. Keep in mind, I'm super skinny and like I like tweaking out, like can't stay sober, and here I am, like I have some answers, you know. It's like this guy was probably like, dude, you're such an idiot, like, you know. And but what he was doing is he was planting seeds. And I think that's really important to say. Like, I wasn't ready, but guess what? When I was ready, his example was right there. I remember how he behaved. I remember that he used to give rides to guys to meetings. He used to give rides to me because I had 2 DUIs and I couldn't get, you know, I had to ride a bike. He picked me up, took me everywhere. Never took money from me. I used to offer, dude, I have some money. And he's like, no. You do the same for the guy who doesn't have a ride when you have a car. And I get to do that today. That's because of him. He used to say that to me. So all these things, and all the stuff that he passed on was the good stuff, right? It's all the stuff that's out of the big book. And it's never left me. You know, it's just I wasn't ready. So when I work with guys today and they're not ready, that doesn't trip me out. That's totally fine, man. You might not be ready for another decade. You may never do this. But my job is to be the example of Alcoholics Anonymous and carry the message so that I'm planting seeds. That's what I tell myself when someone's not getting it and they're just like, you know, doing their own thing. That's fine, man. That's fine. You do what you got to do. I'll tell this funny story because it just illustrates my alcoholism. Is that he said this to me once. He goes, I'm sitting on the bay with him. We're looking at the Bay Bridge. And we're doing step work again. And I'm telling him the reason why I went back out. Why I drink. And I had like a reason for it. And I was like, you know, I really think, and that's some stupid philosophy or some stupid spiritual thing that I thought I knew. And he goes, you know, Jesse, I wanted to say this to you. I've worked with a few guys and you by far have the best ideas I've ever heard out of a new guy. And I was like, thanks, man. Like, you get it. Like, thank you. Like, I've always thought that I had, you know, I was like, you know, that's cool. Thank you. And he's like, yeah, it's going to be really hard for you to stay sober. And he meant that as a dig, you know, and it pissed me off. But he was so right. He's so right. I had to be done. I had to have no more plans. I always had a plan. I always had, hey, I'm going to school. I'm doing AA, but I got school going on too. I'm going to do something. I'm going to have a career. I'm doing AA, but I got a girlfriend I'm also working on too. I got to make sure this relationship works out. And then right after that, I got to move out of town. I'm going to move here. I'm going to do this. I always had a plan. And it didn't work for me until I had no other plans. It was like this or death. Like, when it got to that point, it took me 7 years of going in and out of the rooms for me to get any time. That's it. And I really do mean it then when I say this, is just keep coming back. Because it was just so, you know, it just took so long for it to click. But when I kept coming back over and over again, I was a little more willing to do stuff that I wasn't willing to do before. I was, because my ass was getting kicked a little bit more. I was like, okay, I got to do the whole sponsor thing. I'll never forget when Cody told me, he goes, maybe you're one of the sick ones that needs to go to a meeting every day. You ever thought of that? I was like, I'm not one of those guys. And I was. So I did a 90 and 90 for the first time. I think I was working with Kevin at the time. I did a 90 and 90. I did everything that my sponsor was saying I should do. I started being teachable. Still made a lot of mistakes, but at one point, I just really did everything I could to stay. And I worked the steps with my sponsor. I treated it like my job. I didn't have much of a job at the time, so it's kind of... It's kind of easy to work at I think Starbucks and work the 12 steps. I'll say this, that the miracle that happened for me was that I was working my steps and I was really busy and I did 90 and 90. I went to meetings. I got of service. I was of service. I chose a home group. I stuck with my home group, even though I copped resentments at my home group. And I was working my steps, and I got through step 9. And that's where it happens. I mean, that's the work is between 4 and 9, right? I mean, I heard this is that, you know, 1 through 3 is getting right with God, and 4 through 9 is getting right with myself. And then 10 through 12 is getting right with others. And once I got right with others, it was amazing because after 9, I talked to somebody. I was talking to just another alcoholic, and they asked me, when was the last time I thought about drinking? And it tripped me out because I hadn't. I couldn't remember when I did, because I have an obsession of the mind. And the big book talks about... our disease is twofold. You know, I have a physical allergy, which means when I start drinking, I can't stop. I knew that was there. And I also knew I had an obsession of the mind because I can't stop thinking about it. And everything else that's going good in my life or anything's going on, it overrides everything. And I can't bring into my consciousness what happened the last time. I can't bring back those suicide attempts right before the first drink. I can't. That's the crazy part about this. And so for me, what's amazing about this whole thing, the first thing that blew me away was it was true what they said. The obsession was lifted. It's been lifted and it hasn't come back. It's been 4 years and change. How crazy is that? The fact that that hasn't come back. I've had thoughts of drinking, thoughts, right? But not an obsession. An obsession will override everything. An obsession will stick with me, right? So, and the fact is I don't get to keep that unless I try to give it away. So that's what 12 is about for me, is I have to give it away. I have to say yes to being a speaker when I don't really feel comfortable doing this. You know, I've never felt comfortable doing this. We do stuff all the time we're not comfortable with in AA. And that's what we have to do to stay here, though. I've seen it. The guys who stay here are the ones who are willing to be inconvenienced by this. You know, Lee talks about that all the time. It's like, I don't want to act like I got this and then start living my life and forget that AA is the reason for my life. You know? Everything that I have, I'll talk about what it's like now. It's like, I can't even explain to you how much better it's gotten. Like, just being real about this, I was talking to Nate last night on the way to this meeting, the 8 o'clock podium meeting, and I'm all like, because I call him to like bitch about things, and like, you know, sometimes, and I'm like, hey, you know, like, kind of feeling out of whack, you know, like I'm tripping out over this, I'm tripping out over that, and I was like, I have anxiety about my kid getting his blood drawn today, you know, and I have anxiety because I took on another project at work, and now again I'm front and center in the company, you know, so it's like the pressure of that sucks, you know, and I was like, and Katie's really struggling, you know, she's not getting sleep, so we're getting our ass kicked a little bit, and I forget else what else I was tripping on, and he kind of laughs at me, and this is what brothers do for us. This is what our inner circle does for us in AA, is they remind us, they give us some perspective, because I can't see my life because I'm in it sometimes, and outside looking in is a lot easier. And I was like, bro, these are good problems today, man. It's like, remember the problems you had 5 years ago? I was like, yep, you couldn't keep a job, man. I used to get pissed off because I worked with these, I was like a 25-year-old working at Starbucks. So these like 18, 17-year-old girls would piss me off. Remember that, Kevin? I'd be all pissed off. I'd be like, I can't believe she told me to take out the trash, you know? You take out the trash, you know? I was so pissed off. And he would just be like, dude, you just need to get through one more day, you know? Just like, it's one day at a time, just like, get through this one shift, and I'd be like, oh, I hate this, you know? And here I am with a career today, not a job, a career today. I've worked at the same company since I've been sober. I don't do that. When it gets hard, I run, right? I have, my marriage is intact, which is a miracle. These are good problems. I worry about my kids. You know what I mean? I'm there for my kids. That's so cool. I always thought that if I had kids, I'd just be the shittiest dad. I just really thought that. I'm like, because I'm just so selfish. I'm just going to do my own thing. Kids are going to get in the way. I'm not the kind of guy who has kids. You know, I used to tell people that. It's just, I'm not that guy. You know, and then here I am, you know. It's like, I love having a family. Oh my God, I love having a family. It's the best thing. And that wasn't my plan, right? That wasn't my idea. I'll say this because I think it's worth the last, 5 minutes of my pitch. I almost lost my marriage at 2 years of sobriety. I was unfaithful to my wife. Not sexually, but unfaithful. And So you can still, man, I can make, and it sucks because you can't blame drinking now. You know, I can't blame the drugs, can't blame the alcohol. That's just me. That's just me acting out on my defects of character. And it's me not feeling like I'm getting enough attention, you know? So I do my thing and I crush the woman who just married me, you know? And I think we're getting a divorce. We printed the papers. She had him sign. She just was waiting to see if we were gonna follow through, you know? It was a very tough time in my recovery. And I was doing the deal, man. I was like, I'm an active member, baby. You know, I still did that, you know? And it was really hard for me. I felt like a new guy again. Because then it was like an emotional relapse, you know what I mean? And I didn't want to go to meetings. I didn't want to do anything. I didn't want to do any of that. And I actually wanted a different sponsor. And I wanted a different inner circle. And I wanted people to like validate me and feel good about what I was going to do. So I'm done with this person, you know? And that, my attitude is all warped again. I was all not seeing the world right. But here's the miracle of all this, is that I kept showing up. I kept showing up to AA. I hated what I heard. I hated what guys were saying. I felt like everyone was talking at me, like everyone knew my stuff and was talking about me, you know? And if it wasn't for Nate and Bob, I would not have, probably wouldn't be here. I don't know if I would have stayed sober. I don't know. It's like I had two sponsors at that time. Nate would be like, read this story tonight. And I was sleeping on a blow-up mattress at my parents' house, you know? It's like, with a kid, you know? They're at the apartment, and I'm at my parents' house. And I'm going to AA meetings, and I'm working with my sponsors still, even though I'm reluctant, and I'm like literally arguing all the time about whether or not I'm gonna stick with him or not, you know? And here's one of the craziest miracles I've had so far in AA, and this is a God shot. This is my sponsor always says, is God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. I'm showing up to these meetings, and I'm praying even though I don't have any feelings towards it. I'm praying, I'm saying, hey, help me out here. I don't really know what's going on again. You gotta help me out. Well, I'm going to these meetings, and I go to the Wednesday night Madman's book study. And that was a great meeting. And there's only a circle of us, though. There's only like 10 of us or 12 of us that would come. And I'll never forget that Leo showed up with his sponsee. And he never comes to this meeting. And he doesn't know what's going on. I've talked to him. He doesn't know what's going on. He's not part of my circle. He shares, and he says, I don't know why I came here tonight. You know how he kind of does that, you know? I don't know why I came here tonight, but I felt the tug, and I trust it, and I felt like I had to say that if your sponsor is doing the work, and you know that, if he gives you direction, it's not your sponsor talking, that's your God talking. I don't know why I felt like I had to say that, but... yeah, thank you. That's the end of the share. Like, what the hell? And I knew Bob was doing the deal. I literally just got chills and goosebumps, and I just was like, and from that point forward, I go, okay, it doesn't get any more. If I ignore that sign right in front of me, then I really don't deserve any of this. You know what I mean? So it's like, damn it, Bob, what do you want me to do? And he said, I want you to treat your marriage like you treat your program. You don't give up on it. You don't feel anything, that's fine. You do all the work and the feelings will follow later. I did that. I thought I could get away from AA, and I want to say this, is that I thought Alcoholics Anonymous was going to be the solution that just took care of the alcohol problem. It is the answer to all my problems today. That's the miracle of this. And I just did not know that. It is the solution to my marriage. It is the solution to my boss at work. It's the solution to parenting for me. It's everything, bro. It's crazy how effective it is. It's a really funny thing that I was like, I need to get a therapist outside of AA so that way I have another opinion coming in about my marriage, you know? So I go there and I look up this person and I sit with them and I talk to them and I'm sharing some stuff. She goes, You use a lot of the same terms I hear in recovery. Are you sober? Are you a member of a 12-step program? I was like, yes, I am. She goes, I have 11 years. And she goes, I was like, oh, yeah? Wow, cool. What's your number? Yeah. What's your number? No, she says this to me, no joke. She goes, if you're comfortable with it, I'd like to work the steps with you. She goes, in my opinion, if you're okay, she's like, and I love being able to know when someone's in recovery. In my opinion, my professional opinion, there's nothing more effective than the 12 steps at taking care of almost anything. No joke. So we work the steps together. You know what I mean? So I'm working the steps with my sponsor. I'm working the steps with my therapist. And I'll say this to end is my marriage is better than it's ever been. My relationship is better than it's ever been. And I love that woman so much, and I cannot believe that I almost threw it away because my perception was so warped. You know what I mean? The magic magnifying glass that we talked about, what I focus on becomes bigger. It's like now that my perception has changed, all the things that I notice about her, all the good stuff, right? So thank you. Went a little over, but thank you for my sobriety. Thank you for being here tonight, 12-stepping me. Appreciate it. Let's give Jesse another round, huh? Yeah. Good job, buddy.